The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, along with my colleague Roy Saunderson, who unfortunately can't join us today as he's en route and got caught in traffic on an airplane. But I am grateful today for a conversation that I think will be of interest to everyone here on the show today. What am I talking about? Well, consider this. Have you ever considered that your biggest complaint about running a company might actually be your greatest asset? Discover the secret that helped turn around the Campbell Soup Company and led Nabisco Foods Company during 5 years of consecutive growth. Doug Conant, president and CEO of Campbell Soup Company, and his co-author, Mette Nørgaard, are renowned teachers and leaders and will reveal how to use interruptions and other incidental points of contact to promote the company's values, purpose, and agenda. Today, as I've obviously alluded, our guests are Doug Conant, president and CEO of Campbell Soup Company, and Mette Nørgaard, co-author of Touchpoints, Creating Powerful Leadership Connections in the Smallest of Moments. I'll introduce them both here and then give them your bios here a little bit and your accomplishments for a moment so people can realize what we get to do today. Doug Conant, as I mentioned, CEO of Campbell Soup under Conant's leadership. He has reversed the precipitous decline in market value and employee engagement, improving its financial profile and enhancing its relationships with customers. He was previously the president of Nabisco Foods Company, where he led that unit to 5 consecutive years of double-digit growth. As a native of Chicago, he earned degrees from Northwestern and from the Kellogg School of Management. Mette Nørgaard is an expert on strategic leadership and organizational learning. She works with executive teams around the world to create distinct learning solutions that advance the company strategies. Her clients include top executives at Microsoft, Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson, Estee Lauder, Harley-Davidson, Hard Rock Cafe, the U.S. Navy, and, of course, the Campbell Soup Company, along with many others. She has degrees from the Fielding Graduate University and from California Lutheran University. Doug and Mette, welcome you both to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am very grateful for your time today, and let's just get right to it. Why did you write this book? Why Touchpoints, and why are they so important?
Well, Mette and I have been working collaboratively together for about nearly 5 years as we have been teaching a Campbell CEO Institute course, training course, and we began to realize that we had something to share in terms of having a voice around what's going on in leadership in corporate America. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to share our perspective with a broader audience, and that's what led us to creating this book. The notion of touch points is all about creating powerful leadership connections in the smallest of moments. And I'm going to let Mette tell you a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, yeah, you had asked us to talk about what a touch point is. So just to define it, a touch point occurs any time two or more people get together to get something done. That means it's about more than just the relationship, though that could also be what we want to work on. But often there's an issue at hand. There's something that we need to tackle. And so in that moment, when two people come together to deal with that issue, the leader can be either one. It's not necessarily the one with the highest title. It's the one who behaves like a leader. And what does that mean? That means it's the person who creates, who deals with the issue in a way that creates a little more clarity maybe, a little more energy, a little more commitment, a little more direction, so that you not just deal with that issue now, but you do it in a way that next time you can do it even better or faster.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this idea of any time two or more people come together to get something done, you got a touch point.
And the reality is that knowledge workers today are facing small encounters every 11 minutes where they have an opportunity to have a positive impact in that encounter or a negative impact. It's not that they really have a choice. The average interruption is every 11 minutes. And even within those 11 minutes, they tend to interrupt themselves once or twice just to keep things, just to stay in touch with their world. So it's a world filled with these encounters and interruptions. And you should view your day in many ways as a system of encounters. And in each one of those encounters, you have an opportunity to make a difference or you don't. If you're effective in those moments, you build a reputation for being highly effective. If you're not effective in those moments, even though they may be incredibly brief, you'll develop a reputation for being ineffective. And so what we want to focus on is how you bring your leadership thinking, your business strategy, and all your work to life in these small moments where you have to listen carefully, frame the issue, and advance the idea, sometimes within nanoseconds, a hallway conversation, an email, a text message, a phone call, unplanned or planned, where you have to be highly effective in the moment. And that's the notion of touch points. Too often we develop this grand notion of leadership as being something that only leaders do. And the reality is we're all leaders. We all have the potential to contribute and help build a better world and help build a better company. And what we encourage people to do is to reflect on how they can lead in the smallest of moments.
Mm-hmm. So this leads to a question then, because knowing that we're going to be interrupted every 11 minutes or we interrupt ourselves, I thought it was just me. I thought I had ADD, but I do feel better knowing this. You know? I feel better knowing this. How do we leverage it? How do we gear ourselves up then to make sure that we're a more effective leader?
Well, I mean, I think part of it is first getting very aware that all these little, what we often consider interruptions, are really opportunities to lead. And so we approach them with a very different orientation and attitude of one that there's an opportunity here. And I think the other bit of preparation we do is we need to be aware that any time I engage with you, I'm in effect engaging with everyone you will be engaging with, potentially. So if I handle this moment really well and if I help you have a little more clarity, a little more commitment in this moment, you can pass that on to the next level. And they can pass that on if it's a really great idea. Likewise, if I really blow it, you know, you'll pass that on too. Actually, you'll pass it on to even more people, right?
Sure.
And so what we're saying also is it's this awareness that these, every little one of these interactions is an opportunity to really do it well and saying, you know, that went well, and then that will spread sort of exponentially, or it's a moment where you might blow it. Maybe not in a bad way, but just by the fact that you ignore people, you don't pay attention, you shrug it off, you're not there, you pull out your PDA as they're trying to get your attention, whatever it is, and that too will spread and build your reputation.
Yes. This work grew out of a very specific conversation Meta and I had. We were training a group of next generation leaders as part of a Campbell CEO Institute class up in the Poconos. And we were in this lovely bucolic setting, walking around a lake as we had broken and were taking a break before the last session, and then we were going home. And we were reflecting as we walked around the lake, and Meta said something like, how can you go back from all this beauty and peace and quiet back to the chaos of your office? And with all the constant interruptions,
right?
And I said to her, you know, that's a very interesting question. I don't think of them as interruptions. I think of them as opportunities to be helpful to people. And as we talked about it, we developed this notion. We started to move the paradigm around. You know, we talk about leaders often talk about trying to minimize all these interruptions so they can do the real work.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we've looked at it, we realize that the real work is managing those interruptions well. It's not the time in between. It's the actual encounters and the actual interruptions. And if you manage those well, as I said earlier, you develop a reputation for someone who's highly effective. If you don't, believe me, the organization will start to paint you into a corner that you do not want to be in.
It's fascinating. What do you say to leaders then that say they just don't have time for all that if they want to get work done?
The reality is they don't have a choice. They're going to be interrupted every 11 minutes. They don't have a choice. And if they choose to work in an environment where people have access to them and where they're working with others, it's going to happen. So, you know, you can choose to engage in it and make it work or not. Mm-hmm. But I think the notion that we're advancing is, you know what, you can not only handle all these interruptions, but you can manage them well, and if you're thoughtful about it, you can become more effective and more efficient than you were before.
Wow, yeah. What does this look like in terms of an example then, and how do you manage it so that you get geared up? Okay, so I got in my head now that I'm going to have to manage these relationships, and they are going to happen every 11 minutes. And boy, there's times when I say, gosh, I could have done that better. I shouldn't have done it that way. Maybe walk us through how this works.
Well, let me just take the mystique out of it. Because,
please.
Again, anytime two or more people get together to get something done, you've got a touch point. It's as basic as if you've got little kids at home and you need, you know, you've been sitting eating breakfast and you need to leave the house. And all of a sudden you say, okay, we've got to get going, now put your shoes on. Now, if that's a three-year-old, you may have an issue, you know.
Yep.
And the minute you go from just chit-chatting to getting a job done, there's a shift. We have a touch point. You sit in a conference room and everybody's chit-chatting waiting for the last person to arrive. The minute that person arrives, we lean forward saying, okay, now let's get to it. And so these situations are happening all day. In fact, I mean, every day is nothing really but an elaborate string of touch points. You don't have a choice about that. Your choice is, do I deal with it in a way that makes the next time easier and better, or do I just deal with it now, you know?
Yeah.
And so whether you're a parent or whether you are a family member, you know, trying to deal with an issue with your spouse, or whether you are at work dealing with an issue with your employee, your colleague, or boss, I can choose to take the role of the leader, which means I want to deal with this issue in a way that leaves us able to deal with it better next time, with a little stronger relationship, a little more clarity, a little more commitment, whatever it is.
And for us, there's a very simple model for doing this, which is I'm very pleased with the work we've done because, in my opinion, we've gotten to the far side of complexity here. And there's a very simple model for being in a touch point. We talk about something we call in our book the touch point triad, and it's well developed in the book. But there are three things you have to do in a touch point. First of all, you have to listen intently, and that helps you figure out what is going on and what the other people you're working with need from you. So you listen. The second thing you do is you have to frame the issue. You got to make sure that everyone is on the same page. And everyone has the same understanding about what the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third thing you have to do is advance the agenda in some way. Now, it may be we're going to make a decision now, or we're going to decide not to decide, and we'll get back together at some other time. But the notion is listen, frame, advance. Listen intently, frame the issue, advance the agenda in some meaningful way. Listen, frame, advance. The other thing we do connected to this, and then this is the whole model, is we challenge people to work in a paradigm that starts out with how can I help? Every engagement, every interaction you go into, the challenge is how can I help? Because basically the people you're working with are going to be making decisions. As a leader, typically I'm not in the room 99 out of 100 decisions. I'm not there. I need to make sure that the people that are representing me and making those decisions are getting the benefit of my input, are representing me well. And if I want to do that, I have to be helping them. And what I found is, in my practice of this, the more I help them, the more they help me. So we challenge people to bring a paradigm of how can I help, then listen, frame, advance, and then at the end of it, in some way, either in the moment or after, you say, well, how did it go? And what can I do better next time?
And so follow it up.
Yeah. Sometimes there's no follow-up, but you ask yourself or you ask the person explicitly, well, how did it go? And because we all second-guess ourselves after every moment, right?
Okay, yes.
How could I have done that better?
Sure.
But the notion of how can I help, listen, frame, advance, and how did it go, we have found is a very effective, simple model, listen, frame, advance, that everyone we've worked with has been able to grasp. And as we've observed leaders, hundreds of them, we see highly effective leaders are incredibly capable in the moment of listening carefully, framing the issue, and finding a way to advance it. And the more you practice it, the more dexterity you have with it, the more effective you are, and the more efficient you are.
Well, well said. Well said. I appreciate where we're headed with this. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Doug Conant, CEO of Campbell Soup, and his colleague and co-author, Mette Nordgaard. You're listening to Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll be right back.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with Doug Conant, President and CEO of Campbell Soup Company, and Mette Nordgaard, co-authors of Touchpoints, Creating Powerful Leadership Connections in the Smallest of Moments. A book that's coming out very, very soon. I'm very, very excited. And we've been talking about it so far around how do we create these elements for great success, knowing that we're going to be interrupted, how do we make it a better experience? Let's talk about that a moment. I know at the Campbell Soup Institute, you have a lot of training that you emphasize a lot of different things. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? What makes these great leaders, and what do you focus on there?
Well, we focus our Campbell, we have a comprehensive Campbell University training program. One of the legs of that is something we call the Campbell Soup CEO Institute, where we take next generation leaders, and Mette and I conduct a 2-year course with these next generation leaders, where we meet regularly, have homework assignments, have exchanges of information and letters, and where I do one-on-ones with all the executives. And our focus there is on helping our leaders find their leadership voice, and then also on and helping them to inspire others to find their leadership voice. So it's more than just training leaders; it's teaching leaders to help others learn and grow. And that's the focus of our institute. It starts with the Campbell leadership model. The first expectation of all employees at Campbell is that they inspire trust. And so we focus on our Campbell leadership model. But what we've discovered with executives, I'm sitting in an office right now, and I have probably 1,000 books in here, and I probably have 50 leadership models written about. And none of them are quite right for me. They don't take into account my background, my experience, my DNA. They don't speak to me as completely as I would wish they did. And we find that leaders are looking for ways to create models that truly work for them and help them develop the ultimate in authenticity and as they strive to really represent themselves in their work in a way that's highly effective. And so we focus on developing them in that way. And as we develop these models, we then discover that they have to bring them to life in every moment, and that is what's led us to this highlighting touch points, bringing your leadership model to life in each and every moment, and that's what a touch point is we try to do. Meta, would you build on that?
Thank you, Doug. So just to give you a little more background on the CEO Institute, if you're developing your leaders, is that out of the global leadership team at Campbell's, there's 350. And so every other year, Doug and his vice president of human resources and many of the other leaders pick 20 who works personally with Doug for 2 years. And over those 2 years, we basically co-facilitate 5 modules where we start with saying, you know, to really lead well and to have your own voice, you've got to get the fundamentals in place. And so we spend some time talking about how do you manage your own time and energy so you have enough to give others. And that's very, very basic. And then we take them to New York City for 2 days, a 2-day program where everybody who is anybody is on stage and talks. And we call that module Raising Your Sights. So they get a sense of what's possible. And if I'm going to be a leader in 20 years from now, as the world around me is changing, what do I need to grow into to truly be effective? Mm-hmm. And then as we come out from that one, 6 months later, as they really thought about what they need to be in 20 years, we now say, well, now you need to sort of put in place your own credo as a leader, your own voice, and get very clear on your purpose. Why do you choose to lead? And get very clear on your code, the code you choose to live by, and get good feedback. And so we're halfway through the program when they really have a good sense of what they aspire to and where they are today. And then the rest of the program deals with how can they effectively then develop the leaders around them. And because they watched Doug invest 2 years in developing them, there's really no excuse for them not developing the people who report to them. It literally is like ripples in the water. It's amazingly effective.
Yeah, and we find that this what we're really driving is to the notion that Bill George cultivated, I thought articulated well in his books.
Yeah.
Is helping people develop their own authentic leadership style.
Yeah.
And then touch points is all about helping them bring that to life in each and every moment. Touch points themselves is the shorthand for this is the action is in the interaction. But you have to be prepared before you get into that interaction. You really have to be a person of substance. You have to know who you are. You have to have a good business strategy. And there are a lot of prerequisites to be effective in the moment, but we try and help our leaders develop those prerequisites so that when they get into these moments, they're prepared.
How do you reward or encourage people to develop others? Is it part of? It sounds like it's an expectation. You're certainly spending resources and time to develop people to develop others. And you know, a lot of people call this servant leadership, and they say a lot about it. But at the end of the day, they're rewarded for personal performance, so they don't end up developing others. How do you make sure this happens?
Well, we do a few things at Campbell Soup Company. First of all, we are maniacal on trying to drive employee engagement. And we do a regular survey, and we have an elaborate process for getting employee input on how each work group is going. And one of the questions we ask is, how effectively did your manager help you implement the action plans that you collectively identified last year in order to build a better department? And so that managers know they're accountable, and ultimately their employees get their colleagues and the people that work for them get to vote on how they're doing. The other thing that we emphasize here at Campbell Soup, and it's in our performance evaluation system, is not only what they do. Everyone has two components to their performance evaluation. It's the what and the how. It's what did you do? I mean, what did you commit to do? And they're very specific objectives. They can be financial, market share, projects. But then it's also how did you do it? And we basically ask, we have them evaluated by their superiors in terms of how they're operating against the Campbell leadership model. And so by evaluating the what and the how and giving them the equivalent of 360-degree feedback on a regular basis that their managers have visibility to, in fact, that I have visibility to, we create a sense of expectation and also a sense of accountability. I do believe that you have to have systems in place to help facilitate and make things happen. Otherwise, it becomes just rhetoric. And so I do believe if you're serious about it, you have to make a commitment to it in terms of a system or a process.
I'd like to comment on that also, Max, for two, there are two thoughts that I think are very important. One is, why should you develop the leaders around you? Well, for selfish reasons, if nothing else, because it's one of the most leveraged things you can do. That if your energy can, I mean, part of everything you need to do can be shared with seven or eight others because you've developed them, you'll get much more time to do things or to take on an even more substantive project. I think the other reason, and this is one that for me has come up, has come from my background, is I grew up in a small community in Denmark where my dad ran the cooperative dairy, and that model in the dairy back then was the mastery model out of the European apprenticeship model, which meant that people would come and serve 2 years of a four-year apprenticeship with him as a master in the craft, and he would take them for 2 years, teach them as much as he could before they were sent on to the next dairy to complete their craft. And he didn't do it because I will invest 2 years in those kids and then I'll harvest the labor. No, you did it because it's what you did. Somebody did it for you at one point in time. Mm-hmm. And so in the old apprentice model, the idea really is that the master has an obligation to set the highest professional and ethical standards, and the master has an obligation to develop the next generation in their craft. And I profoundly believe the same goes for leadership. Leadership is a craft. It's about rolling up your sleeves, going to work, becoming the best possible craftsman you can be, and making mastery a lifelong journey. And I think that's the commitment we make when we choose to become leaders.
What a beautiful metaphor in my mind, and I'm smiling as you say it. We recently had a chief scientist from Gallup who wrote the book Well-Being on the show, and he talked about how in Denmark they also have the highest levels of well-being because of these aspects of life where we encourage lots of different facets in our life, not just a financial side or a social side, but all these pieces to our life that make us better. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, interestingly also, I just saw a piece of data in Financial Times. It's also the country that has today the highest level of upward mobility from one generation to the next, which was very surprising.
Very interesting. Meta, could I ask you this? What do you see as a commonality between among great leaders? Is there a common theme or a common thread you see?
In my experience, and let me tell you, I work with thousands of leaders because I used to run the Executive Institute for Franklin Covey. And Doug, the reason I just, love working with him and have worked on this book with him is because he's one of the finest I've ever worked with. And I do, the leaders that I really see show that capacity that Doug has are those who give full attention to getting the results. I mean, let's not discuss whether you have to deliver or not. You know, you got to deliver your results. And they also care profoundly about relationships. So there's this incredible balance between results and relationships, so performance and the people, or creating clarity and movement on the issue and building resilient relationships. So it's always this and thinking. I see a lot of very, very nice leaders who says, look, just cut me some slack and give me 6 months to get the relationships in order and everything in place, then I'll deliver. No, that's not how the world works. Or I see the opposite, but it's the balance between the two that's magic.
Okay. Well, there's some very public examples of leaders that have fallen, and they led, in my opinion, based on just one or the other, as you said. But more so, it seems to me, on the result side, regardless of what the relationship is like, in fact, maybe even dominated by fear, where to me, touch points feels like it's all about the relationship and that those relationships will drive great results.
Yeah, absolutely. And Meta's made a very good point, though. The genius of the and here is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Here at Campbell Soup, I talk about we've got to be tough-minded on standards.
Okay.
And tender-hearted with people. And for many executives, that's a difficult concept to embrace. What do you mean? Do you want the numbers, or do you want the people to be fully engaged in the work? And the answer is both. Because what we've discovered is we have to create a culture that is wildly engaged and extraordinarily engaged if we want to deliver extraordinary results. Just a few minutes ago, you alluded to Gallup, and Gallup's done some great work linking employee engagement to performance, bottom line performance. And and in my experience over 35 years, it's really inarguable. You have to have a culture of high engagement where people feel valued in order to consistently perform at a high level. And we find our employees and our leaders buy into that completely. And when they do, you just have this magical work experience, which we've experienced here at Campbell.
Well, it's interesting. You know, Doug, I'm grateful to hear this because I'm a big fan. I've always believed this metaphor. But, you know, for 50, 60, 70 years even, a lot of research has been talked about around this area of engagement. And yet it seems like, well, the Conference Board recently said that morale's never been lower. Part of that, of course, is from the financial, you know, crisis we've all gone through. But with such low morale, why is this such a hard hurdle for leaders to embrace? Why don't they take on more of this as an opportunity?
Well, I think part of it is that there's a concept
we talk about in the book also, which is that once you're a leader, leadership is not about you, it's about them.
Yeah.
And as long as you keep thinking that you have to do it all yourself, when you have a touch point, you really focus only on the issue and you ignore the people. And so you don't really care what happens to the person as long as you get the issue handled. But when you really get this profound notion that leadership is not about you, it's about them, then I have to cultivate them to get the results because I can't do it all, you know, and particularly not when you're in a role like Doug's where you've got 20,000 people reporting to you. You know, the way you get it done is through them.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you, I've read the Conference Board work, but I'll tell you, that is not our experience. Our experience is that you can have high engagement and good morale, even in difficult circumstances. We're having probably the most challenging year we've had in a decade, and we just received our latest employee engagement scores, and for every one person that is troubled, one of our leadership group, for every one person that's troubled, we have 77 people that are highly engaged. 77
yep.
to 1. World class is 12 to 1. So I can tell you, even in difficult times, if you pay attention to the organation will pay attention to the business and will be fully engaged in the effort.
Well, I love this conversation. We have to take a quick break, but I tell you, I can't get enough of this. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Doug Conan, CEO of Campbell Soup, and Mette Nordgaard, co-author of Touchpoint, Leadership Connections in the Smallest of Moments. For Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brown, and we'll be right back.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
If you think you've seen online TV before, let us surprise you.
VoiceAmerica.tv is online now.
The leader in live internet talk radio has done it again. Multiple channels, a state-of-the-art viewing experience, live and on-demand programs streaming 24 hours a day. It's exactly what you want, when you want it.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From health and wellness to business, sports, and everything in between, discover our new world. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv now and experience the future of online television.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio. This is Max Brown with our guest, Doug Conan, President and CEO of Campbell Soup Company and Metanura Guard, co-authors of Touchpoints, Creating Powerful Leadership Connections in the Smallest of Moments. Doug, as we finished up that last segment, you were talking about how even during some of the hardest times, Campbell Soup right now is experiencing tremendous engagement and a lot of morale, a lot of good things happening, and that this can actually happen if people just figured out that this relationship aspect should not be ignored.
Absolutely. But importantly, it's important to know that you have to be equally vigilant around the business relationship and tackling the business issues. The what you need to do, the how you need to do it, is where we believe, Meta and I believe, people can be infinitely more effective. And an observation about in difficult times how engagement can be high, my experience is that that has to be attended to before you encounter the difficult times. It's very much like Stephen Covey's emotional bank account. You have to build such a large deposit. I mean, you have to be in the black in terms of genuinely connecting with your organization and having them fully engaged, so that when challenging times come and inevitably you have to make tough decisions and you make some withdrawals from that bank account, you can still be in the black and people can still really appreciate the opportunity to come to work every day. So my first observation, and probably the most significant one, is the time to pay attention to morale is before you need to. And that argues for bringing this how can I help mentality, and arguably this altruistic sense that, you know, as a leader it's my job to create this kind of environment for people and to teach and help them learn and grow. That has to come in a very authentic way to people before you can really get anything done. When I came here, it was a very low trust environment over a decade ago, and they didn't trust me either. And it took me quite a while to build credibility, to begin to ask people to really lean into their jobs and to lean into the work, because it was very low trust. So it does take time.
Well, and to your point, it's interesting. The Edelman Trust Barometer for 2010, and they've been doing this for about a decade, they found that in 2010, about less than 30% of respondees said that they trust their CEO. Mm-hmm. Less than 30% found what they said credible. And I think what you're saying here is significant. And there's an opportunity here, isn't there?
Clearly, and we all see it every day. I mean, Meta and I, we see people who are highly effective at working with other people and leading them, and people who are not. Yeah. And you know, this in that sense, it's not complicated.
And I think for the leaders,
please.
For the leaders who want to do a little bit better on this, I think one of the books that Doug and I use in the CEO Institute is Stephen M. R. Covey's book, Speed of Trust. Mm-hmm. And what's brilliant, the idea that we have to build trust is nothing new. I mean, most of us really know this, but the challenge is, so why doesn't it happen? Yes. And one of the notions that we really work with quite a lot with the leaders at Campbell's is that you know, if we say, you know, well, telling the truth is a good thing to do and it builds trust, and then we think of the opposite as being lying, and everybody says, well, I don't lie. No, but do you sometimes spin, or do you withhold information, or do you give it a twist that serves your interest a little better? And when you do those things, trust doesn't go up. And so it's a matter of, they call it counterfeit behaviors, and I think that's such a brilliant term. So the question is, you know, whatever the behavior you are, is that a behavior that will increase trust, or is it a behavior that will make people punt or pull back? And I think all too often nowadays, we're very good at sort of manipulating the message rather than staying on message.
Oh, that's
beautifully said.
That is so right, and that's why at the heart of our leadership model, we have six expectations, and as we discussed earlier, the first one is inspire trust. And we actually spend a whole course. We have a whole course developed just to make sure you're grounded there, because the subtitle to that book by Stephen R. Covey about the speed of trust is very powerful. He says it's the one thing that changes everything. If you're in a high trust relationship, it's amazing how productive you can be, and you can do it's amazing. If you're in a low trust relationship, I don't care how easy the task is, it's incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
And so we believe that that is foundational to the concept of effectiveness in the workplace. And I also think it's foundational to the way a CEO may be viewed. And so as a CEO, you need to look yourself in the mirror. You need to have a plan and an idea about how do I build trust with my employee population in a way that is authentic and real so that it's not contrived and it's reflecting me 24/7. I think every leader has that challenge. It's particularly challenging for a CEO who's got 20,000 sets of eyes on him 24/7.
Mm-hmm. Max, may I ask you a question?
Okay.
Around trust? So have you ever worked with someone you didn't trust?
Yes.
Yes. So let's say you and I, let's say our boss gave us, we worked together, and our boss gave us a huge task. You know, a really difficult task. And he said, you two have to work together, but trust is very low between us. Actually, you trust me about as little as that person you might have thought about just a minute ago.
Mm.
Now, as we have to deal with this issue and take on this task, where is our energy going to go? To managing the relationship between us or to, you know, really dealing with the issue?
That's right. That's right. My productivity is going to be, I'm going to be kept back. I'm going to be more reserved until I know where you're going to be and maybe what you're doing. I'll play it like a game almost.
Yeah, and so often what I'll do is I'll ask people, you know, so in that relationship, can I be creative?
Yeah.
And people tend to say no, but see, I disagree with that. I think people can be immensely creative. They're just using the creativity to damage the relationship and outmaneuver the other person.
Oh, well said.
Instead of dealing with the issue. So in a touch point, it's always about the issue and the relationship. And when trust is low, I start putting my energy on the relationship and on outmaneuvering you or watching my back or making sure I document everything or copying everybody on the communications. You know, when trust is high, you and I together can concentrate all our energy on the issue.
Well, I love that statement, Mehta, and I describe this often in a presentation I do called How Much Productivity Could We Gain Back If We Didn't Have to Watch Our Back?
Yeah, well put. Yes.
But I love that. What a wonderful comment. This is a great segue, actually, for why are some leaders uncomfortable or even fearful of touch points? Does humility and ego have an impact?
Well, I think humility, in my opinion, is essential. I think Jim Collins has done some good work on this in his level 5 leadership model. You know, he talks about what really makes a level 5 leader highly distinctive is someone who's characterized by great humility and fierce resolve, determined to get things done, but in a very humble way.
Yeah.
And my observation is that if I keep my ego in check and I seek to understand before trying to be understood all the time, I learn so much more and the people around me feel valued and start to offer very creative solutions to things. If I'm high control and I'm not seeking to first to understand, I'm just seeking to be understood, I find that the relationship really doesn't grow, that I don't get the best out of them, and that as a result, we don't make our best decisions. So I think humility is essential. I think ego can get in the way. I think some executives are fearful of this intimacy notion of being more transparent, more genuine, for some people that's difficult. When we talk about being tough-minded on standards and tender-hearted with people, that is sometimes difficult, you know, for executives who are introverted, who are more closed, who have never really shared more of themselves. And we do find that that's not unusual. We also find that, at least in the CEO Institute, as we work this through thoughtfully, people are more than happy to open themselves up as long as you're creating an environment around them where they feel safe.
Yeah.
And so, but if you don't feel safe, if the organization you're associated with does not have an abundance mentality and is trying to build the business and be thoughtful with you, it's hard to be yourself, and it's hard for an executive to be his or herself. So this is not surprising, and I think as a CEO or as a leader, your challenge is to create an environment where people can feel safe enough to really bring their full self to the discussion.
Yeah,
and that's unfortunately. Many environments don't invite that.
I'd like to build to that for just a moment, if I may.
Please, Meta.
What we're also looking at is when you go into a touch point with the attitude that it's not about you, it's about them.
Yeah.
That means that I'm not fully in control. We're going to be creating what comes out of that touch point together. And so when I open myself up with a genuine question, how can I help? You know, versus a pretend question, right?
Sure.
A genuine intention of how can I help? And I really listen. From that moment on, I don't know exactly where it will go. And so often, I think because of the time pressures, because of the external expectations for performance, because everything we're dealing with, we want to be able to control and maximize every single interaction. But the minute I open it up, I don't know if it might take 3 minutes or five. Or heaven forbid, 15 minutes, because who knows what they're going to say, you know?
Yeah.
And so I have to be willing to let go a little bit and trust that it's worth the investment of really paying attention to that person, hear it, help them frame it a little better so they can get more clarity, and help them advance the agenda so we can move forward faster together.
I love this conversation. I regret that it's going so fast because we have to take another break. But when we come back, we'll take our final segment and get some final pieces with Doug Conant and Meta Norgaard. You're listening to Real Recognition Radio. This is Max Brown reminding you to keep it real, and we'll be right back.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio. Let's finish this conversation today with Doug Conant, CEO of Campbell Soup, and Metta Nurgard, co-authors of Touchpoints. And let's talk about this just a little bit, because, Doug, I know as a leader you have a lot of things to do, and I'm guessing your schedule is pretty full. So what is this I hear about these handwritten personal notes you're writing to people?
Well, I believe that you can create touch points with people and in a very proactive way and build relationships. And quite frankly, I'm not naturally able to connect with everybody, all 20,000 employees. So I've made it a practice of scanning. My office scans what's going on in the Campbell world every day. We identify 20 to 25 meaningful accomplishments in the company. And every day I send roughly 20 notes out to people recognizing their contributions. Because I'm very well trained to find what's wrong, I'm trying to bring the discipline to my job to spend at least as much time celebrating what's right. And that means that over the past 10 years, I think we added them up the other day, I've now done over 30,000 notes to employees, and we only have 20,000 employees.
Sure.
So people know I'm paying attention, and I think that's important. I also think it sets a tone. So if everybody sees me acknowledging contributions of significance, not just gratuitously reaching out to people, but contributions of real significance, what I find is we start to create a culture that does that beyond me. And it's created a very powerful influence in the company.
Well, and it sounds phenomenal, because appreciation obviously plays a huge role. Recognizing employees for a job well done plays a huge role then in the culture you're creating.
Absolutely, and what it does is it also creates a foundation so that when you engage with them, they're starting out from a positive place. So your odds of having an effective touch point with them are significantly higher, because you've reached out to them, you've built a bridge, and they're not running the other way when they see you coming down the hall.
Well, no, I appreciate that. One of my favorite books on this subject is Thanks, The Power of Gratitude by Robert Emmons. He's a scholar out of California.
Yeah.
And he says to recognize means to see again, so we can actually realign perhaps a relationship that hasn't been as positive in the past and make it better going forward.
That's absolutely true. But, you know, I always have to come back to this notion that I also need to constructively engage in the things that aren't going well.
Sure.
Because the last thing you want to be viewed as is someone who's just Mr. Nice Guy, and you're not paying attention to the business at hand. So then now there are thoughtful ways to engage in what's going wrong, too. But
sure.
To be taken seriously and to really move your organization forward, I find that you've got to be engaged on both sides of the equation.
Yeah. It seems to me that if you play this positive role, however, you have that emotional trust, as you've already talked about, so when you do have the hard times, people are just more willing to be with you.
Oh, you couldn't be more right. Couldn't be more right.
Metta, what would you say? We have about 3-4 minutes left before we have to wrap this show up. What would you say to put this together?
Well, I would like to just sum up by saying that this notion of touch points is both extremely approachable and it's also very aspirational. And that's the beauty of it. So you could just, if you've heard this show, you know, just the next interaction, somebody stopping you in the hallway or an email you need to deal with or an SMS, whatever the issue, take it as a leadership moment. Just try to deal with this in a way that allows the person involved to get a little more clarity or get a little more excited about what you're doing. So that would be number one, and that's why it's approachable. If you do that just 3 times a day, that's up to about 1,000 times a year. It's not bad for a small investment, you know.
Sure.
Now, the challenge is, if you really want to master it, it takes a lot of work, because you probably have, as we talk to leaders, between 70 to 100 meaningful touch points every single day. And if you have to deal with all of those in sort of a way that's consistently positive and constructive. That takes work, because not only do you have to do it today, you have to do it tomorrow. And so if you want to do that consistently, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, you have to, as Doug said earlier in the program, you have to be very grounded in who you are. You have to know who you are. You have to be prepared to step into that moment. And that takes work. And what we say is you've got to have the head, the heart, and the hands for leadership, meaning you've got to have a clear way of thinking about it. You have to have a clear commitment or clear intentions as you go into it. And you have to be clearly competent. And that in itself is a lifelong journey to work on those areas. So it's extremely approachable. And for those who really want to master the craft of leadership, it's also extremely ambitious. So that's what I would love to say.
We can all be better, can't we?
Absolutely.
I love it. Doug, where would people find more information if they want to say, wow, I really want to get this book, or I want to learn more about Campbell Soup? Where do you recommend they go?
Well, each of us has a website. My website is ConantLeadership.com. It provides information on my background, but also the Campbell story and touch points and as well as things like 10 memorable touch points that I've experienced in my life, which are just a handful of words which have profoundly changed my life, and they happened in interactions that lasted a minute or less. So at ConantLeadership.com, there's an opportunity to learn more about that.
Thank you. Meta, how about you?
And my website is metanorgard.com, and that's MetteNorgard. .com.
Wonderful. I want to thank both of you for being on the show today. It is a breath of fresh air when we can have a conversation like this with leaders who are actually living it and doing it. And I want to say thank you to both of you.
Thank you so much for inviting us, Max.
I am very grateful. Very grateful. I highly recommend the book. I'm really looking forward to reading it myself, and I've already read excerpts of this, and I'm very, very excited. I'm grateful for our listeners. We know your time is limited, and we're grateful you come to this show to listen and talk about how to create better workplaces. Grateful for the opportunity to be here. For more information about us, you can find more on the Real Recognition Radio at realrecognition.com. For Max Brown, reminding you to keep it real, we'll see you next week. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
Want to know what's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network host? How about what's new with our network? Make sure you check out the iRadio blog, a look at what's hot at Voice America and beyond. Visit www.iradioblog.com today. Get the inside scoop on every channel on our network, including breaking news, featured guests, blog posts from our hosts, and much more. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter for even more inside action. Visit iradioblog.com today and stay connected.